Omaha Public Radio presents a special program on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Jeff Rakes, president of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Mr. Rakes' remarks were given as the keynote address at the 21st Annual Metro Rotary Luncheon, hosted by the Rotary Club of Omaha, also known as Downtown Omaha Rotary, which is joining with all the other metro area Rotary clubs to celebrate its centennial this year. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Friday afternoon, September 16, 2011, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Rotary Clubs, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Thomas Goodyear, a member of the Omaha Rotary Club and chairman of the Department of International Studies at the University of Nebraska at Omaha.
Before joining the foundation, he was president of Microsoft Business Division and oversaw the information worker, server, and tools business and Microsoft Business Solutions groups. He previously served as group vice president of the worldwide sales and support group at Microsoft. And he served as senior vice president of Microsoft North America. He was the chief strategist beginning in 1984 behind the company's success in graphical applications for the Apple Macintosh and the Microsoft Windows operating system and the creation of the Microsoft Office suite of productivity applications. As you know, he's a Nebraska native, went to Stanford. He and his wife, Tricia, have three children. They are founders of the Rakes Foundation and are active members of the United Way of King County, which is the most active and successful in terms of money that it raises of any United Way campaign in the United States. They have served there as the co-chairs, and they served during that year in which it was the all-time leader in the history of United Way raising funds in our country. In June of 2008, the Board of Regents of the University of Nebraska system renamed the J.D. Edwards Honors Program in Computer Science and Management at UNL as the Jeff S. Rakes School of Computer Science and Management. He's a longtime supporter of higher education and everything that he can support in the state of Nebraska. And it's my pleasure to bring to the podium Jeff Rakes, and please greet all of our Rotarians.
Well, thank you, Tom. I very much appreciate that. I appreciate you deciding to do the introduction instead of David. I really admire Rotary. Your commitment to service above self, it's fabulous. And I'm honored to speak to such a distinguished group, and I'm especially appreciative of to have this honor at this time. You've just passed your 100th anniversary here with the Rotary Club of Omaha, and so I think it's a very special time for all of us to reflect on the amazing work of Rotary. Tom asked me to touch a little bit upon my path from Microsoft, from Nebraska to Microsoft and to the Gates Foundation. I'm going to do that. I'm going to welcome your questions as well. Now, one might see those three as totally distinct phases in my career, but I see them grounded in a common core, the values that I learned growing up here in Nebraska. And I feel especially fortunate to have grown up here. And I share this great fortune with all Gates Foundation employees, every starting Gates class, because I want every member of every new employee coming into the foundation to reflect on their values, who they are and want to be, and what work environment and culture they want to embody in our work at the Gates Foundation. So I'm going to share a little bit of what I share with those employees, because I hope it does the same for all of you, is to reflect upon how fortunate you are to be here in Nebraska, how fortunate you are to have the relationships that you have in Rotary. Growing up on a Nebraska farm, having fabulous parents, great siblings like my brother Ron, being in the community of Ashland. I have two of my great friends here today, Chuck Niemeyer, Dave Lutton. These are people that I had the opportunity to look up to learn from, to have mentor me. And across all of those folks and being here, I learned some important things about that set me on this course in life, important values. I start with work ethic. My dad taught me to drive a tractor when I was 7 years old. He was smart enough not to put me out in the field then. But by age 9, I was working in the fields on the weekends, in the summers, sometimes in the evenings. And that really taught me the importance of strong work ethic, something that's carried through with me through all my life and something that I admire in others. I think there's something special about growing up on the farm. It teaches you a passion for what you do. You're caring for living things. Maybe it's the crop you're trying to keep alive in the midst of a drought, or maybe it's the hogs that you're trying to keep alive when the temperatures soar to 110 degrees. I learned internal competitiveness. My mother was a great influence in my life, just as my father was. And for Alice Rakes, it wasn't so much about whether I beat the other guy, but it was whether I lived up to who I could be. Was I the best that I could be? And she instilled in me that sense of internal competitiveness. Sometimes people make fun of growing up in a small community. You know, other people know your business. I thought it was terrific. A small community really underscores the values of honesty and integrity. There's not a lot of legal agreements between farmers. It's a handshake. Your neighbor expects you to live up to your word, and you expect them to live up to their word. It's that sort of honesty and integrity that you want to see in any work environment, that you want to see in your neighbors. My parents instilled in me a very strong sense of community, as did my brother Ron. I have a vivid memory of an anecdote when I was about 8 or 10 years old. There was a blizzard. Some folks were, for some reason, driving out in the blizzard. Didn't seem like a very smart thing to me. I think they were from Omaha. And they came to our door and asked if we could help them get their car out of a snowdrift. My dad was quick to volunteer. It was about 10 below zero. He was quick to volunteer me. And we got the tractor started up. We got the car pulled out of the snowdrift. They were about to be able to go on their way. And they wanted to give my dad some money. And I'll always remember this. I was standing there next to the car, and my dad said he didn't want their money. He just wanted to know that if his kids were ever in a similar situation where they had a challenge in life and they needed a neighbor to reach out to them, that he hoped that they would do that for his children. And I will carry that with me for the rest of my life. So it was that kind of sense of community that was embodied in my brother Ron. My brother Ron didn't want to be a politician. That was not anything that was on his radar screen. When Governor Ben Nelson asked him to serve in the legislature to fill Jerry Warner's position, he didn't really think that was probably what he should do. My sister-in-law, Helen, called me up, asked me to encourage my brother. That's a strange thing. He was the older brother. And I didn't know that he would listen to me, and he basically said there was no way in hell he was going to do that. And the next day, he accepted the appointment. I called him up, and I asked him, why did you do that? You said that wasn't something that you thought you could do. And he said he felt a responsibility to give back to Nebraska, who was given so much to our family. So I grew up with that sense of community that I think is embodied in the spirit of Rotary International. I learned some other things on the farm. I don't know if you'd call this a value as much as you'd call it a perspective and leadership. And I share this with every Gates Foundation employee because, you see, they come in and they're very passionate about what they can do to help save the world. And I always remind them about work balance. Now, I talk to them about work-life balance, but this is work balance. And I say to them as follows. Every farm kid wants to drive the tractor. Some days you drive the tractor, Some days you scoop hog manure. That's a real job, and we all have real jobs here at the Gates Foundation. Now, another thing that I learned from my father, it's probably not so much of you'd think of it as a value, but it was something that was extremely important in my life and my career. My father, you see, actually got his degree from the University of Nebraska in chemical engineering and was an engineer for Standard Oil of California as the Depression hit. Running our family farm was not his plan, but when my grandfather was going under during the Depression, it became his opportunity. And my father embodied in me that spirit that it's always good to have a plan, but be open to opportunity. He encouraged me to go to Stanford University because he thought it was more important for me to get a business education than an agricultural education. I went to Stanford. I found out they don't have an undergraduate business school. So I said, okay, I should go into engineering. I did a degree in engineering economic systems. I prepared myself to go work for the USDA, and then I bought an Apple II computer to help my brother in running our farm, and the next thing you know, I go to work for Apple Computer. I loved high tech, and I thought software was really amazing. Steve Jobs wanted me to work on the Apple Macintosh. I would have been the seventh person on the Macintosh. But I remembered the notion of following your passion, and my passion was software. And so I joined this little software company in the Northwest, only 100 employees. Steve Jobs called me up November 1st, 1981, 2 p.m. in the afternoon. That was the day I resigned from Apple Computer, and he yelled at me about how Microsoft was going to go out of business. I'll always remember that story. See, Microsoft for me was a dream job. I loved what software could do. That was my passion. I loved the opportunity to create Microsoft Office. But what I really ultimately learned in Microsoft was that I loved working with high energy, passionate people, high horsepower, really smart, learn quickly, people who want to make things happen, people who want to be part of changing the world. That for me became a dream job. And that helps to explain my second dream job. I retired from Microsoft September 1st, 2008. I took a long vacation. I started the next day as CEO of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I followed my passion to that second dream job because it was an opportunity to use my skills to drive positive change and reduce the inequities in the world. Now, I believe that you joined Rotary International because of the mission, to provide service to others, to promote integrity, to advance world understanding, goodwill, and peace through the fellowship of business, professional, and community leaders. That's your mission. And I joined the Gates Foundation because of the mission, expanding the opportunity for all people to lead healthy and productive lives. Bill and Melinda started with the principle that all lives have equal value. Yet if you just look around the world even a little bit, you see that we have not yet gotten our world to where that is truly the characteristic. Melinda was inspired by a reflection from Mary Gates, that's Bill's mom, on the eve of her wedding to Bill. The letter said, "To whom much has been given, much is expected." Now, Bill and Melinda have inspired us to think about how we can use the combination of financial resources, intellectual drive, strong partnerships, and a passion to change the world, to deliver on that mission. Now, a lot of my work at the Gates Foundation is directly tied to values I learned growing up here. I'm passionate about the work because I am idealistic. But every day I come to work with the attitude of practicality. Because you see, even for, and probably especially for the CEO, some days I drive the tractor, and some days I scoop hog manure. I'm constantly asking, how can I help make this more effective? And finally, we can't accomplish our goals without working together with many, many others. The whole is truly greater than the sum of the parts. And that's true of the communities that we all grew up in. It's also true of the worldwide development community. And I can't be at Rotary without talking for a moment about your leadership to eradicate polio. It's our number one priority at the Gates Foundation. I was just with the CEO of Rotary International, John Hutko. He and his team were at the Gates Foundation so that we could work together to plan out the initiative for eradicating polio over the next few years. It's your number one priority at Rotary, and it's one of my favorite things to talk about. And there are three key points I want to emphasize. It's absolutely astonishing what Rotary has accomplished when it comes to polio. Cases are down 99% over the past 20 years, and we are on that threshold of eradication. We never, at the Gates Foundation, we never would have started this without you. We would not have come as far without you. And I know of no other service, no other example of a service organization driving such an amazing, massive global campaign involving pretty much every country in the world. The second point I want to make to you about polio is that the fight has been harder than we expected. Harder than you expected, harder than we expected at the Gates Foundation. The last mile is always the hardest to travel. We have a funding gap, despite your great work, and the funding picture is challenging, given the economic challenges around the world. We have places where the disease has been reintroduced, like the country of Chad, and Bill Gates will be in Chad later this month to speak with those leaders about how to turn that situation around. We have places where we have run campaign after campaign, and we keep missing children, like Nigeria, where I'm going to be with Bill in just 10 days so that we can talk to them and Rotary leaders there about what can be done to turn that situation around. This is already one of the biggest, furthest-reaching health campaigns in history, but we still need to do more. As Rotarians, you need to keep this on your radar screen as your most urgent priority, and you need to constantly remind people what you've done and what still needs doing. This is possible, and it's urgent. If we do what it takes, I know we will win. I want to share a little story with you. Last year, I was in India. I met a 2-year-old girl who had contracted polio in January. I looked at her medical record. She had received 10 doses, but most were for type 1 polio. There are actually three different types of polio. Most were for the type 1 polio, and the two trivalent doses that try and cover all three just didn't create enough immunity. So she got little Arshi, got type 3 polio. Now, that tells you just how challenging the work is. But we can win because we can innovate. Now there is a new tool, the bivalent vaccine, which focuses simultaneously on type 1 and type 3 and raises that immunity level beyond what previously could be done with the trivalent. If that had been available just 6 months before that January, I'm certain Arshi would not have polio today. Now, we can win because we are dedicated to reaching all children. Just this month, we celebrated a full year without a case in Bihar, the toughest state in India. This is an enormous milestone, and if we can beat the virus in Bihar, we can beat it anywhere. Let's keep innovating and fighting so that Arshi's case can be one of the last cases of polio ever in India. And then let's keep on going until there are no cases anywhere, because polio anywhere leads to polio everywhere. If we keep on going, it will save so many children's lives, it will invigorate the world, and it shows everyone the amazing mission and persistence of Rotary International and its 1.2 million members. So again, I want to thank you for all that you represent and for our partnership with the Gates Foundation and Rotary International to eradicate polio. Thank you.
I don't stand up for just anybody.
Thank you. Now, what I'd like to do is to take questions. Just raise your hand. There's some microphones here roaming the audience. I see a gentleman right over here. Great.
Jeff, we're all very proud of you. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
In your role, what's better, spending $1 billion on a massive project to solve a problem or spending $1,000 a million times to solve smaller problems? What works?
Well, I think obviously both are important. I mean, what you represent and what was said here today is the key answer. Everybody's contribution is what collectively adds up to make a big difference. And so what you do in your local communities to create a better environment that will touch kids in that community just like they touched me is what helps create that future. And so I don't see it as I think there's a false trade-off there that I wouldn't want to promote. I think the key thing is each of us make the contribution in whatever way that we can. Now, at the Gates Foundation, we do try and pick out those areas where we think we will have the highest leverage against some key challenge. And we picked global health as our largest area. It's almost 50 to 55% of our annual payout on the order of $1.7 to $2 billion per year. And that's because we recognize that we can have tremendous leverage through vaccines on helping people, in particular in the developing world. You see, if you go back to 1960, in that year there were about 20 million children who died under the age of 5. And the birth cohort was about 100 million. If you fast forward to just a couple years ago, there were about 8.8 million children who died under the age of 5 with 130 million birth cohort. Now, that's progress, but it's still 8.8 million kids. How did we get from 20 million down to 8.8 million? Primarily through improved health and, in particular, vaccination. Through efforts like yours with polio, with the reduction in measles, which used to be the largest killer of children. But there's still that kind of opportunity ahead. So that's how we think about these problems. We try and figure out where can we, you know, what's the data? What's the evidence? Where can we really make a difference? And whether that's with a $1,000 gift or a $1 billion initiative, it's all very important in order to make this world a better place. That's how we come at it. That's how we think about it. Thanks for your question. Yes, please.
Global health is certainly a critical need everywhere. And once you have a healthy community, you have the spirit to tend to, and I'm lucky enough to sit next to the executive director of our Omaha Symphony, and not just here in Omaha, but globally, the arts are so important. I'd love to hear your thoughts on global health as your primary focus, but how the Gates Foundation might also, if I might use the word, minister to the soul through arts internationally. Thank you.
This is one of the great questions I always get. There are many, many important causes in the world. And even in the area of health, people will say to us, well, why don't you focus in on cancer? We don't. With the exception of work on HPV vaccine, that isn't a priority. We believe that the way in which we contribute to philanthropy is to pick areas of focus and to make a real difference. There will be other organizations that will take up the cause of cancer, that will take up the cause of the arts, that will take up the cause of early child education, ways that will be different from ours. It's just really important that we recognize that those are all contributions. And in order, just like in your own businesses, you learned that to be successful you had to focus. We've learned in philanthropy that what we have to do is we have to focus. We admire the work of others, we support the work of others, and we hope that they understand our focus and that where it makes sense that we can work together. But that's the approach that we take. So we are pretty pretty focused in on a, although it sounds like an oxymoron to say that we're focused in on 25 strategies, but then we're focused in, that's part of the challenge of my job, we're focused in on 25 strategies where just one of them is eradicate polio, another one is to eradicate malaria, another one is to raise U.S. high school education and graduation rates. You know, those are just three of those 25. And it just kind of shows you how challenging it can be. But it's very important for us to have a focus around those areas where our core competencies can make a difference. Oh, did you want to?
How about food production?
Yeah, Alan asked me about food production and agricultural development. Let me give you a little bit about, I shared with you a little bit about how we think about the opportunity in reducing the deaths of children under the age of five. Let me share with you the approach relative to thinking about extreme poverty. There is about 1.2 to 1.3 billion people in the world who live on a dollar or less per day. Think about that, a dollar or less per day. 70 to 75% of those people are dependent upon subsistence agriculture. They're in rural areas. Now, if what we can do is if we can help them improve their agricultural productivity, then they can have greater food security and they can have a little bit of income that can afford them to be able to, or help them afford improved health, educate their children. So, you know, when I'm visiting with farmers in Mozambique or Kenya, it's an unbelievable experience to see how passionate they are about what they can do for their kids. The number one thing I learned from them is when they have any kind of income whatsoever, they want to plow it back into the education of their children. So we're big believers that by helping to improve agricultural productivity in the developing world, we can make a substantial difference for those 1.2 billion people or more who are living in extreme poverty. So one of our largest strategy areas is agricultural development in the in particular in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. But in order to pursue that, we tap into a lot of agricultural intellectual property here in the United States. And that's something that I'm very passionate about, especially with the University of Nebraska. Thank you, Alan. Well, again, thank you very much. It's a great honor to be here.
You've been listening to a special program on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Jeff Rakes, president of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Mr. Rakes' remarks were given as the keynote address at the 21st Annual Metro Rotary Luncheon, hosted by the Rotary Club of Omaha, also known as Downtown Omaha Rotary, which is joining with all the other metro area Rotary clubs to celebrate its centennial this year. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Friday afternoon, September 16, 2011, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Gary Bren, president of the Rotary Club of Omaha, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.